Welcome to the Plan Simple Meals podcast. I am your host, Mia Moran. Moms have the power to change the future, one meal at a time. The Plan Simple Meals podcast is for busy moms who want to create a healthier, happier home. Listen in for informative conversations and valuable strategies to make meals healthy, meaningful, and fun. Let's do this. Hey, busy mamas, it's Mia here again for this week's episode of the Plan Simple Meals podcast. Today I have a guest who's going to speak to sort of, I'm really excited about this conversation actually, and I'm not going to give away what we're going to talk about because it's something that comes up a lot, I find, during mealtimes. And our guest is Jessica Felix, and she seeks to empower parents to promote positive parent-child relationships through balanced communication and a supportive community. So welcome, Jessica, to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm super excited to have you because I know that you talk a lot about how we can calm ourselves down, calm our triggers. And I find that sort of two meal-related ones can be kind of huge in parenting. So the obvious one is dinner, right? So like that time of day I find can be super stressful. And we do a lot around how to organize the food and the sort of like planning aspect of that to take that off the table. But even then, I feel like, you know, kids could still have had a bad day, parents could still be tired. You know, there's so many variables at that time of day when we're all coming back together. So tell us a little bit about how you go about dealing with that when all you really want to do is kind of like yell or fold in the towel, you know, throw down the towel and just stop, not make dinner, like whatever it is, whatever your reaction to that situation is, like how, what are some tricks that you have up your sleeve?
Oh, absolutely. It is one of the most challenging times of the day. I think that that is really common across the board. It's hectic, it's stressful. Everyone's already had a really full day. So we look at our kids and, you know, they're ready to melt down. We're ready to melt down. And so some things that work really well and just, you know, calming ourselves is to just want to acknowledge that. Like, I know I can be a push through it kind of person. Like, well, we're just going to keep pushing through this until, you know, bedtime or until we can pour a glass of wine, which is also bedtime.
Yes.
So I think that that's just a universal truth, is that mealtime, that dinner time, mealtime is just, can be really hectic and stressful because everybody is pretty much just done for the day anyway, which is why it's great to plan those kinds of things ahead. And that's kind of part of my philosophy as a parent coach, is this idea that we're taking care of ourselves first, so that we can take care of our family. And that works really well at the dinner time hustle, where, you know, if you have planned ahead and you have organized, that is super helpful. I've seen this theme come up lately where we talk about self-care and we think of it as like, you know, spa days or, yes, you know, meditation and yoga, and really, self-care is a lot of adulting. It's a lot of sometimes doing things that you don't necessarily want to do so that down the road, you haven't procrastinated something important and then created therefore more stress for yourself.
Yes.
So I think that, yeah, it goes right into that dinner time where if you've planned ahead and you've planned your meal, even though that can be a hard routine to get into to begin with, but your program makes it so much easier. Then you're setting yourself up for more calm to begin with, right? So you're caring for your needs of organization, having these things ready, that can really lead to a calmer dinner time.
Yep. And so some of the things, so tell me about some of the things like food related, like when you're in that state, when, you know, because I feel like even if you plan, like we all have those moments, right? So what are the the things that, like, the steps that you say to go through when you're just in that moment where you, like, literally don't know how to move forward. And you have kids, like, right there at your feet, usually right. in those moments, right?
Right, right. And so,
usually
so
pulling on you.
Right. And talking to you. And if you have more than one, they're both saying different things at the same time. And you're not hearing either one of them. Absolutely. And I think at that point, when you're feeling like you're going to lose it, that's the time to really want to accept your own feelings, right? Like I was saying before, we can really tend to try and push through it, to kind of stuff down all the stress and the trigger that we're feeling, whether that's we're overwhelmed or we're angry or whatever it is. We just tend to try and push it down and just get through a situation such as dinner time. And so, you know, if we've started off with caring for our needs ahead of time, doing that self-care piece, so we're organized, but things are just really chaotic, then the next step is to just accept that this is where you're at right now and to accept the feelings that you're feeling, that there's no shame in feeling overwhelmed. It doesn't make you a terrible parent, to feel overwhelmed by your kids frequently. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I think that we tend to build up this kind of super mom type image or super parent where it's like, you know, if you've got your ducks in a row, then you shouldn't ever be overwhelmed. And that's just really not true. We're right. so human. And that's a really good thing because then we're showing our kids how we deal with that overwhelm. And so we're accepting our feelings and we're allowing their feelings to kind of get into their shoes too and go, okay, if I'm overwhelmed, then clearly these younger, less experienced people are feeling giant emotions also and are also overwhelmed. And so sometimes the best thing you can do is to just stop what you're doing just for a few minutes. There's this in between pushing through it and abandoning it completely, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this balance in the middle where we go, okay, we need a time out, not a timeout, like put your child in timeout, but like a time, right? Where mm-hmm. it's, you just go, okay, things are where they're at right now. We're just going to sit down for a minute and reconnect through these feelings that we're having. We're going to, you know, do a quick puzzle, or we're going to read a little book, or we're all going to go run around outside really quick and come back in. And then we're going to proceed with what we had planned, what we were doing with dinner. Just those, it helps you get out of that I can't cope sort of mindset, you know, when you're so stressed that you're like, I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. And it can kind of help you reset your brain, and it helps you reset theirs, so that they can come back in and be ready for that.
Yep. I love that. And I find that those moments that we need to pause are sometimes mm-hmm. the moments when we think we can't. And yeah. a lot of times that happens, I think, around food and meals, just because, you know, that if we're, you know, in a dinner is one example of, you know, when it's like you're trying to do it all because probably somebody's hungry or, you know, whatever the moment is. And then in the morning with breakfast, it's like you're usually trying to get out the door on the other side.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. so then so you have this whole other pressure of time. And I feel like we just tend to internalize that, but that breath is so powerful, and I'm certainly not perfect. So I've not taken the breath before. And then you end up being that, like, you know, mom trying to get everyone, pushing everyone out the door eventually.
Yeah.
But I have also taken the breath, and it's hugely helpful.
Yeah. It's really interesting when you take it. You don't realize that you're taking it. And then halfway through, you're like, oh, I guess that I didn't need to rush that after all.
Yeah.
I do that a lot after work, like, right, you know, right around that dinner time bell. And, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to run upstairs and grab, you know, a dish towel from the linen closet really quick. And that dash upstairs turns into, well, maybe I'll just sit on the bed for a second and breathe, or, you know, and then it's like, oh, nobody fell apart. You know, we're still moving forward. I was able to take a pause without really realizing that I even needed it. Sometimes that happens too. and everything is still fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to take that time. And oftentimes we just feel like we can't.
And it's funny because also it's so simple, right? It's as simple as like sitting or breathing, or I always say drink a glass of water because we don't usually drink enough water.
Yes.
But it's like those things are so obvious and so simple that sometimes I think we forget how how powerful they are, or we just don't, you know, we don't acknowledge how powerful they can be because we're not doing them regularly, even though they're right there.
Yes. At our fingertips. Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. I think it's because they're right there at our fingertips that we're like, well, that can't possibly be the solution. The solution has to be more complicated than that. We tend to overcomplicate things.
Yeah. And then those, I mean, and I have had that moment of like, yes, being able to go off and get a massage or a pedicure or whatever. And I have to say, usually those moments aren't actually that relaxing in the end. You know, because you've left and then you're coming back to this chaos, and you almost need those tools more after those situations as a mom than you needed to begin with. You know what I mean? Like, yes. I don't know.
Yes. And they take far more planning.
Yes.
Far
they
more
do.
Planning. You have they to drive somewhere. Yeah. And then you have to drive back. And yeah, I would completely agree with that. And so these tiny little simple things can be so powerful, and they're right there. And oftentimes we just think that we don't have time. That's a huge theme in my life, is I often am like, I just don't have time. I don't have time for that. But then if you just do it, you find that things shift around, things will move, and your priorities become more clear.
Yeah. Okay. And I have another question for you, but then I realized that we like kind of 100% skipped over and jumped right into the conversation of you just telling us more about you and who you're a parent to and what you do. So let's do that real fast, and then, or not real fast, but let's do that. Cause I kind of introduced you and then we didn't go into all that.
Perfect. That sounds great. I am a mom to 3 kiddos, and my youngest is 3. So we're right in the throes of threedom.
Yeah.
Right now, which is an interesting age always.
I always thought that whoever wrote the book about the terrible twos just didn't have a 3-year-old yet. Yeah.
They wrote it during that 2-year-old year.
Exactly, exactly.
Or they were tricking us on purpose.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so you have a 3-year-old.
3-year-old and a 9-year-old daughter who is amazing. She's really into roller derby, junior roller derby. So,
wow.
Yeah. That's cool. That's her big thing. And then my son is 14 and just started high school. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So got quite the age range going on. And I was first introduced to this conscious parenting paradigm when my son was younger, probably around 3, actually. Because 3 is a really tough age. It's not in your head. And, and so looking at different ways that I could not only manage his behavior, but really manage mine. Like I found, places in myself where I didn't know that I was like that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't know I could fly off the handle because there were footprints on the carpet. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was a thing. And so looking for a way to connect with him that was genuine. I was I really didn't want to spend more time apart, you know, like via timeouts and things like that, because I was a working parent, and like the time that we had together, I wanted that to be a time of connection and not of a lot of redirection or just directions in the first place. So conscious parenting or peaceful parenting, people call it lots of different things, really spoke to me. And I find that it's this middle ground between being the ultimate authority and being a permissive, do whatever you want kind of parent. Yeah. So that was sort of my journey, was finding out that there's this middle ground, and that it's, that then you're raising people who, you know, grow up and want to hang out with you still, which is great. And also through the teenage years, still want to tell you what's going on in their life. They still want to share those things with you. And so that's been a revelation to me over the last couple of years with my son, is how well this works moving forward and how much more of his life I know about than, like, say, my parents knew about me at that age. Mm.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I almost have a teenager. Like, I'm a month away.
Oh, it's wonderful. It is a wonderful time.
It is. I've thrown everyone in a car and we're on this road trip across the country. So it's funny because he's just at that stage where he's going to go through this thing, you know, that everybody goes through. And here he is stuck with his family in a car. But it's all good.
Good close bonding.
So we get to the dinner. Let's go back to the dinner table. So we get our kids to the dinner table. We've taken our deep breaths. We've gotten dinner done. And we're sitting down. And I feel like maybe that space, I know for our family, that space is a big opportunity for communication and talking. And it's just like there's something about dinner. And it's funny because a lot of people say, if I don't have time for dinner, can I sit down for other meals? And I guess my answer is always, yes, of course, sit down whenever you can. But there's something about that time at dinner that's like the end of one day and the beginning of sleep that I just think it's a very powerful time to sort of unpack the day as a, you know, and support our kids. But mm-hmm. it's also, I feel like, a time where you really do have to strike that balance that you just talked about. Because, like, so what are some of the conscious parenting techniques when your child won't eat what you've made, or you know, when somebody has clearly had a bad day and can't really, you know, sit at the table? Like, what are some of those techniques to keep that communication and that balance and getting through
question.
Those moments?
Yeah, that is such a good question. I don't really enjoy labels, but I do have one picky eater.
Yeah.
I've tried to find more positive ways to phrase that, but really, it can drive you nuts as a parent to have, you know, especially when things change and a meal that they've eaten before with no issue suddenly is, you know, the grossest thing they've ever been asked to eat. Yeah. And so really early on, and I don't know how well this aligns with what you like to talk about, but really early on with my son, who is on the autism spectrum, so he has got some sensory issues. And so usually it's not the way food tastes, it's the way it either looks or the way it's going to feel in his mouth. Yeah. And so really early on, we just instituted what we call the peanut butter sandwich option. So if we all sit down to dinner and he goes, "Oh, what is this? I don't want to eat this." And he's not tactful about it. He's quite blunt. You know, he disparages the person who made the meal or anything like that, but it's sort of like, "This is gross. I'm not eating this." Mm-hmm. It to save ourselves from, "You have to take a bite," or, you know, something like that, is we just said, you know, "You can have this, or you can always make yourself a peanut butter sandwich." Mm-hmm. And that probably started when he was 5 or 6, where we just went, you know, it's my philosophy is completely hands off. I will make the food. That's my job, is to plan and prepare meals, in conjunction with some help. But, you know, as a parent, my job is to, here's the food that we have, and his job is to either eat it or prepare something for himself. Because at 5 or 6, he was completely capable of making a peanut butter sandwich. Mm-hmm. And so that's the deal. And now it's evolved into, he's really part of our planning process. Mm-hmm. So that helps a lot. And that helps to open the communication also kind of ahead of time, if he knows that his wishes are being taken into consideration as part of the meal planning, because there are about 5 meals that he really enjoys. So that helps, because then everybody's sitting down to a meal they enjoy, and he knows ahead of time when it's not going to be something he wants to eat, and he has a plan for what he'll eat at the same time that we're eating, which is great. And if someone's had a grumpy day, honestly, that's usually not the kid's dad. then it's, you know, how do we how do we support them through those tough feelings? And a lot of times it's talking about it ahead of time or during bedtime so that it's not really part of our dinner table conversation, if that makes sense. So if it's just, you know, I've had a really tough day and this happened, then that's fine. But if they're just like, you know, I hate the world and everybody in it today, mm-hmm. then it's like, okay, well, we can definitely talk about that later. Mm-hmm. So having, I mean, it's such an interesting thing to have kids who are kind of this big range of ages, because the 3-year-old just wants to eat as fast as possible and then get down.
Yep.
And the 9-year-old wants to tell us all about her day, every, yes. you know, recounted minute of it. And the 14-year-old just wants to talk about probably video games. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting to sort of be able to go through. We have a question that we ask at the mealtime, which is, what was your favorite thing about today?
Mm-hmm.
So that helps to keep things positive. Sometimes on some days, kids really have to reach for what yes. that favorite thing was, but it helps to guide the conversation.
Yeah, I love that. We do that too we do the thorn and the rose. So we do like something that wasn't so good and then something that was great. And sometimes we'll do it about the day at hand and then sort of worries for the next day. And we're always sandwiching like the bad with the good. So if we're doing 2 days, you know, you're starting with the good and then leading into the thing that was a little bad. And then the next day you start with the bad and end with the good. So you're, you know, the starting and the ending is always on the good thing. And it's funny because with kids, sometimes there is nothing bad and they'll just skip that part. And, you know, they'll say that they're skipping yeah. that part. But then, you know, as kids get older and there's little struggles that happen in the day and they start to realize that not everything's going their way, I find that that is, for my kids, has been a really powerful tool for, oh yeah, like I didn't really like that. And they can just say it in a safe place instead of sort of holding it inside of them.
Yes. Yes. And I think that that is such a great tool, such a great tool, and really helps them begin processing feelings about things prior to having a lot to process, like you're saying. Yeah. And it's in an environment where we're not then tossing our judgment on top of their feelings. Right.
Yeah.
So we're just leaving our judgments behind. This is a safe place and you can say all that you're feeling without like kind of comment from the peanut gallery,
yes.
which is great.
Well, and the other thing about back to the food part, which is something you said, and I think that probably kids who are on the spectrum versus not, you know, we might operate differently as parents, but the whole notion about texture and consistency in food, I think is something that we have to get and be in that centered state as parents, because mm-hmm. food is one of those things I think that kids can use as, it's just as a control mechanism, right? Like they don't mm-hmm. technically have to eat. We can't force them to eat, right? So it's like
right.
one of the three things that they could control if they wanted to. But if we can tune in to whether they're having like a controlling moment or whether they genuinely don't like that the zucchini is mushy, and then you kind of like reevaluate how you can make it, because it's not always their fault, you know, and it does
right.
take children a little bit of time to like a new food, but it could be that we overcooked the broccoli and it like legitimately isn't the best ever, and that we can deal with it because we've had broccoli 1,000 times, but
yeah.
that they might not be able to because we didn't, you know, it's not at its best state, and we sort of have to forgive ourselves for overcooking the broccoli, but then just
yeah.
think like, could I chop it smaller? Could I roast it instead of boil it? You know, there's so
yes.
many different ways that we can play detective and sort of help our kids be successful.
Yes.
If we know that they're having an issue with like the, you know, something about the food, that's not just a control thing.
Yes. And I heard this great idea one time, that, so far we haven't instituted this ourselves, but it was something that I thought would be really useful. And that's, each person in the family gets 3 things that they definitely dislike. I don't want to eat this ever. Like for me, it would be mushrooms. That's like my number one.
That's funny. That's my husband.
And so I don't ever want to eat mushrooms, but now that I'm an adult, I can deal with them if they're cooked into something. But yeah. As a child, that's asking a lot. Like what you said, yes. That's asking a lot because they may not be getting them in their, you know, shiniest form. And so they're like, I have to eat this. And this isn't appealing. But as an adult, I can stomach them. But I think that that's really powerful too, is allowing our kids to say, I have opinions about food. And these three foods I don't want to eat. For my son, it would be mayonnaise. He does not like any kind of saucy anything, but especially mm-hmm. mayonnaise. So, you know, that if we instituted that, I think, you know, like as part of our meal plan prep, then I think that that's a great way to honor the fact that they have opinions about yep. food, and to keep ourselves from feeling like their dislike is related to how well we cook or what we've, yep. you know, prepared and presented to them.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing you said about the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which doesn't exactly fit into what we do, but actually it there's part of it that does, because so I talk a lot about like the rhythm of food, and that actually if you're sort of, you know, put food sort of loosely on a schedule so that you're always having soup on Wednesday or whatever, then it allows kids the opportunity to just to feel secure about it. Because a lot of what we come to at dinner time, a lot of times we come to it in this like, you know, state where we need 1,000 deep breaths and we don't know what to make for dinner. And there's a lot of stress behind that, and kids pick up on that, right? And so that kind of gives them the out to sort of start to say, no, I don't want that. And so I feel like the important part of that is that it's like a structure. Like, yes, you can have the dinner or you can have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And a similar thing that I share is the idea of a bedtime snack. So mm-hmm. I think that the biggest mistake that maybe we make as parents, and you can comment on this with your knowledge, is that, you know, maybe we're having dinner and the child says they don't want to eat it, but we don't have like a plan in effect for what happens. So then we end up giving in to what they say they want. And we haven't like done that boundary of it being part of our structure, and us being the adult and them being the child. But so one of the things that a lot of people in my tribe have instituted is the bedtime snack. So if a child doesn't eat dinner, the parents know that their child's not going to go hungry, because they're always giving them like a oatmeal smoothie or a piece of toast with whatever on it before bed. And, you know, so they're not worrying, and the child knows that they're not like getting exactly what they want, but they won't go hungry either. So it's kind mm-hmm. of, it's very similar to the peanut yes. butter sandwich, just at a different time.
Yes. Yeah. And I really love that. I really love that. And I think sometimes as parents, we get into this power struggle with kids where we're like, all right, well, if you don't want to eat your dinner now, I'm going to put it up. And then if you're hungry later, this is what there is to eat. Yeah. And I mean, I know I've done that plenty of times. And when I just wasn't tuning into whether this was a control issue or whether it was, I just really dislike this and I don't want to eat it.
Yes.
And so if you know that you're going to offer them a bedtime snack ahead of time, and you've already set that as part of your family routine, and it's a value to you, I think that that works really well, because you're setting a boundary. Like at dinner yeah. time, we're eating this. You know there will yeah. be another chance in 2 hours to have a little snack. It might not be exactly what you want, but you know it's going to be there. Yeah. And it's not that they've talked you into it. It's yes. that this is just already our routine. This is what we do. And so I think that that can be a really powerful thing.
Well, and I think that's what's so powerful about the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? Is it's structured. It's like, it's part of the mm-hmm. rule. It's not like anyone's bending anything. It's just, that's the option you've given. And
yes.
Yeah. Cause I find those big tantrums happen, you know, when we're in that power struggle of like, okay, should I make it macaroni and cheese because they're asking for it and they won't eat what I've just slaved over.
Right.
And so often we give in because at that moment we don't want to deal with a tantrum. We just want like peace before bedtime.
Right. We just want to eat our dinner and we want to have a nice family time while we're doing it too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Yes. So I think that's the key, is that it was pre-planned and the kids already know that this is a boundary. I will say that since we, almost 10 years ago now, instituted this, you can have a peanut butter sandwich or you can eat what we're having. We've had zero. I mean, I hate to say zero because there's got to be at least one, but I can't remember it. Struggle around food at dinner time.
Yeah.
So it makes a big difference.
Yeah. That notion of knowing, I mean, cause I feel like for both sides, actually, for kids and for parents, just not knowing what's going to happen is like a big stress trigger,
Yes.
Not knowing what you're going to cook is a huge one for moms. And then not knowing what to expect when you sit at the table is definitely a big one for kids.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit then, and then we're going to, one of the things that you talk a little bit about is a supportive community. So will you elaborate a little bit on that and how that can help us to become sort of more empowered and peaceful parents?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my perspective around parenting is that parenting is more stressful when we're isolated. Parenting is more stressful when we don't have somebody who is like-minded and in our corner. So this can be friends and family. It could be that we have really different views from our own parents. We could have really different views from a lot of our friends. And so we're trying to do these things and we either second guess ourselves a lot because we don't really know anybody else who's trying things a different way, or we're just alone a lot. The way that our world works right now and where we are is that we're kind of all in our boxes and we're all just kind of going about our day, and a day leads into a week to a month, and we're just, we get up and we're just in our family units, and then we're, either at work or we're at home. And so having a community, even if it's a virtual community that you can reach out to and say, hey, this is happening for me right now. What do you think about that? Or I just wanted to say, hi, I just had this great breakthrough with my kids or with myself. And I just wanted to be able to tell somebody about it who would understand the significance, mm-hmm. who would get the magnitude. So I think that that's really important, which is why I run a Facebook group for parents who just want to be calmer, who want to come from a place of patience rather than a place of reactivity. I think that's just the simplest way to say that.
Cool. I love that. So, that leads perfectly into how people can get in touch with you, because it sounds like the Facebook group is a great way.
That is a great way. So it's Facebook/ Calm Parenting, I believe.
Okay. And we'll
link that up.
Well, it's okay. And we'll link to it in the description. So
perfect.
I'll make sure
that
it's right
great.
And link to it in the description. Yep.
Wonderful. And then earlyendeavors.com is my website. It has quite a few just freebies for parents who, want to look things over. Lately, recently I did a call about three-year-old behavior and what our kids need to hear from us every day in order to just feel secure, which is where a lot of that three-year-old behavior comes from as they're moving through this, transitionary period. But also my big one is this 30 Days to Calm Parenting email course. So it's just one email every day for 30 days with just a little tip for the day. It starts with these five deep breaths, which is like taking that pause, right? And they make such a huge difference. And then it just moves on from there. And so I would encourage anybody to just sign up and get those emails. Makes a big impact in a small amount of time, because we don't have time for giant, writing and reading, and we just need something quick sometimes. So
it's so helpful to be reminded. I do a 30-day thing too, and it's just, I find that like sometimes I even sign up for my own just to remember, just remember, like it's simple. It can be simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's a helpful thought.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just those little things can make a big difference.
Yeah, well, cool. Well, thank you so much for being here today. And so I have this question that I ask everyone at the end of the podcast, which is, tell us about a meal that had a big impact on your life. And it could be because of the food you ate or just a big aha you had at the table or the company you were with. And it could have been a meal that, you know, happened in your childhood or that you had last week with your own kids. Can be anywhere, but just tell us, give us a glimpse into your life through that meal.
Absolutely. So it sounds really simple, but the meal and it, now it can be replicated, which is the best part. But the meal that really stands out for me is my boyfriend and I, boyfriend of like decades, and I went out to a fondue restaurant and had a meal by ourselves. And it was probably the first time we'd done that in 2 years or more. And having that time to reconnect, and it wasn't just about schedules or kids or home improvement projects or our family or anything else. It was just about kind of rediscovering those things about each other that we were really attracted to in the first place. And we don't always get that on just like a regular date night. This was really special. Like a fondue setting is very slow paced. So you're there, you might only eat a little bit, but you're there for hours and hours together, cooking your food and enjoying your food. And we were just, you know, we walked out just feeling like, wow, that was like a whole weekend away together. Yeah, in just this one meal. So it was incredible. It's really incredible.
I love that. And I date night, I think, is a huge thing. That's a huge self-care thing, actually. You know, if we're talking about balance.
Yes, exactly.
Making space for date night, I think, is very important.
Yes.
And really finding a space to connect during that time.
Yeah.
It's great. Well, thank you. I love that story. And thank you for being here today. And I hope that people sign up for the 30 days of was it mindful parenting? No, it's, what do you call it?
Calm. I call it calm parenting.
Calm parenting, which is even better. Mindful sounds difficult for some reason, but calm sounds like you would want it. So I love that. So thank you so much for being here today and for all your knowledge. And thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it so much.
All right. So busy mamas, I will see you on that next episode of the Plan Simple Meals podcast. Bye for now. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Plan Simple Meals podcast. If you like what you heard, the biggest compliment you can give us is to share Plan Simple Meals with a friend and subscribe, rate, and review our podcast at iTunes. I absolutely love sharing simple solutions to help busy families eat clean and live well. Visit healthymomsmeetup.com and come join in on the fun. In our free group, you can chat with me and other health-seeking moms, get new recipes and tips, and never be at a loss in the kitchen again. Come join the fun at healthymomsmeetup.com. I cannot wait to meet you there.